Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Morning, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 25, Text 5. Vachalam Balisham Stabdam.
Vachalam Balisham Stabdam.
Agyam Panditamaninam.
Agyam Panditamaninam.
Krishnam Archam Upasritya.
Krishnam Archam Upasritya.
Gopame chakru apriyam.
Gopame chakru apriyam.
Vachalam balisham stabdam.
Vachalam balisham stabdam.
Agyam panditamaninam.
Agyam panditamaninam.
Krishnam marcham upasritya.
Krishnam marcham upasritya.
Gopame chakru apriyam.
Gopame
Vachalam balisham stabdam. Agyam panditamaninam. Krishna marcham upasritya. Gopame chakru apriya. Vachalam. Over-talkative. Balisham, child. Stabdam, arrogant. Agyam, foolish. Panditamaninam,
thinking himself wise.
Krishnam, Krishna. Marcham, a human being. Pasritya, taking shelter of. Gopa, the cowherds. May, against me, chakru, have acted, apriyam, unfavorably. Translation. These coward men have acted inimically toward me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, but who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. Translation. Everyone together. These coward men have acted inimically toward me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna. He thinks himself very wise, but he seems a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, through the insults of Indra, Goddess Saraswati is actually praising Krishna. The Acharya explains, Balisham means free from pretension, just like a child. Stabdham means that he bows down to no one because there is no one for him to offer homage to. Agyam means that there is nothing more for him to know because he is omniscient. Pandita Amaninam means that he is highly honored by the knowers of the Absolute Truth, whose transcendental form, and Krishnam means he is the Supreme Absolute Truth, whose transcendental form is full of eternity and ecstasy. Marcha means that although he is the Absolute Truth, he nevertheless appears in this world as a human being out of affection for his devotees. Indra wanted to rebuke Krishna as Vachalam because the Lord had presented many audacious arguments in the line of Karma Mimamsa and Sankhya philosophy, even though he did not accept these arguments. Thus Indra called the Lord Balisha, foolish. Indra called him Shtabda because he had spoken boldly even in the presence of his own father. Thus, although Indra attempted to criticize Sri Krishna, the Lord's transcendental character is in fact impeccable. And this chapter will demonstrate how Indra came to recognize the position of the Lord. Vachalam balisham stabdam agyam panditamaninam Krishna marcham upasritya gopa me chakru apriyam. These coward men have acted inimically toward me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, but who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. So, Lord Indra is speaking with a very sharp tongue about Krishna. And actually, this never ceases to... this particular leela never ceases to amaze me, because in so many different ways, but quite often I think that why is Indra becoming so offended? After all, he gets so many pujas. When you think about it in that way, Indra is getting so many Indra pujas every day. Thousands and thousands, and somewhere in one place, someone didn't do one. I often think about this. You know, so many Indra pujas are there, and well, so many are worshipping Indra, the king of heaven, and in one place in Vrindavan, at Govardhan, they didn't do the Indra puja. So he's becoming so angry that he actually has taken the decision. I will read. He will make the decision to actually kill all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So angry he's going to kill them. That's the colossal anger. That normally you would say that is an overreaction. Right? Someone, even if you think someone is making some offence, you know, there's certain reactions. But when you go to the stage of then you want to kill that person or whatever he or she has done, then that is really a heavy... because, you know, Indra will send the Samvartaka clouds. So Samvartaka clouds, they come at the pralaya, that the destruction of those clouds come over when there's meant for the rains to come down, and not just ordinary rain. You know, these are like so torrential that everything becomes flooded out within a few moments. And not only rain, but like hurricane, lightning, all of a sudden, wasn't it? I think that all of a sudden it went dark. It was like one of these cyclones. Down here we call them cyclones. Just like recently we had a big cyclone that wiped out most of the town of Innisfail in North Queensland. I think Maharaj was just up in that area. Did you go down there?
No, they
probably didn't allow you to go in there. So some of the devotees were going to go up there and distribute prasad, but the emergency SES wasn't allowing anyone in, just because they were trying to get the basic infrastructure back in place, just like water and electricity and sewerage and all that. So so we had one like that, and then you know, there's been a few. Catherine just had one, and you know, over there in Western Australia also. And then, you know, many years ago, there was one cyclone that just demolished the whole of Darwin. It finished the whole town. So, actually, I remember that one devotee who was there at the time, he wasn't a devotee at the time, he said he happened to be in Darwin. He said he was living staying in a hotel. And everything went dark and cold, even during the day. He said it was just pitch black. You couldn't see anything. And he was huddled in the hotel, and when he came out, the other side of the hotel was gone. There was a corridor. On that side there were rooms, and the corridor on the other side there were rooms. He said on that side there was no more that side. That was gone. He just happened to be in the side that stayed up. So he said that, you know, it was so dark, and the house, he said that the main thing that he remembers, apart from the dark and the cold, and he said was the noise of the wind. He said, the noise of the wind, it was just like, it was terrifying. So that's what he remembers the most, the wind coming through. So along with the Samvartaka clouds pouring down, there's wind, there's lightning. You can just imagine this scene. And Indra, he's going to take this action against all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And here he's saying that, he's calling Krishna all sorts of things. Obviously, he has lost his actual good sense of discrimination. In the next verse, it mentions that he considers all the inhabitants. He considers all the inhabitants of Vrindavan to have gone mad with pride. They've gone mad with pride, he says. Sometimes it's like that, isn't it? You know, someone's accusing someone else of the very things they are most guilty of. Generally, they are sometimes you hear people, oh, you're so bad. No, you are so bad. No, you're the one that's bad. Arguing who is the bad one. You are the one that's bad. No, you are more worse than me. No, I can never be as bad as you. You are 10 times worse than me. So we see sometimes that. And sometimes, quite often actually, that people accuse others of things that they are actually very guilty of. It's quite common. Generally, someone in the mode of ignorance, especially, will be like that. And that actually, one of the symptoms of the mode of ignorance is that he will be expert in insulting others. I remember this from the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says he will be expert in insulting others. And generally, those insults will be reflective of the very things that he is guilty of. So it's almost like exposing someone. When someone is very extreme in anger or in greed or accusing others of that. If someone is very extreme in accusing others of these things, generally we can understand that they are guilty of those things. This is explained actually in many places. They are generally guilty of those very same things. And somehow or other, psychologically, they're trying to cover their own position by accusing others of those things. It's explained by the acharyas in many places. I did a seminar on the three modes of material nature, so I had to research all these things. So it's like that. We do that. And generally this is very much reflective of the mode of ignorance. And also, it can be also a mode of passion. It can be a combination. Mainly mode of ignorance and mode of passion, a combination of mode of passion and mode of ignorance. Generally these symptoms are exhibited. So we see that, Indra is, we can conclude here that Indra is so extreme. He's accusing the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And he's accusing Krishna. He is foolish. He is arrogant. He is foolish and he is arrogant. What is that? Dumbo dapo mimanas chakroda parasameva agam chapajata pathasabana masurim. Krishna describes in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that these sort of qualities like pride, arrogance, harshness, ignorance, anger, these are very much qualities of the asura. They are asura qualities. And more or less, Indra is saying that Krishna is like an asura. He's very arrogant. He's very foolish. He's an over-talkative child. Over-talkative. And the coward men are inimical towards me. So Indra, and as is mentioned here, later on, Indra will be taught a lesson by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He doesn't recognize who Krishna is. He doesn't recognize who Krishna is. And someone who is beyond the effects of the modes of material nature can see things very clearly, can understand. But because Indra is still affected by the pride, and Krishna detected this, and so we can conclude that Krishna is arranging for this situation. Actually, it is very almost inexplicable how Indra has become so extreme in his reaction, and he is so proud. As I said, one Indra puja is not being performed, and he has become so offended. So this is a very unusual. I asked this question in a class when one Swami was giving in a class, and I asked him what his opinion and why did Indra become so proud. Well, he has a big position, and big position can also mean, he said, big position can also mean big pride. So, that was a good answer. The bigger the position, and the bigger, and if the, in that position, if one hasn't developed good qualities, you know, there's one saying that along with great power, there should come, along with great power comes great responsibility. Some people think, oh, this person is a big, powerful position, you know, why is he like that? You know, they look with the eye of envy. But they don't see that so much responsibility also is there, not just the power. Along with power must come great responsibility. So part of that responsibility also is to, control the senses, control the mind, control pride, control arrogance, control the anger. So the more powerful one is, the more humble he has to be. Otherwise, the power will be taken away. The power comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. God is giving you position, power, and if one abuses, at some point in time, that will be taken away again. He's given by God, and it will be taken by God. He is abusing all these things given by God. So we see actually Krishna is going to take the pride from Indra. We'll read like that. He's going to take the pride, take the arrogance. And sometimes this is achieved in various ways. Krishna has chosen this to do it in a particular way here. He doesn't try to retaliate against Indra directly. He doesn't try to do that. He is just withstanding his attempt. He's withstanding Indra's attempt to punish not only him but all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So there are different ways to deal with situations. Someone asked me this question, I think in Perth, you were speaking about humility, but sometimes people they do things against us, and we want to retaliate, and but should we retaliate? Should we take action? And generally, the Shastras say that in defense. Say if someone is coming to attack the temple, something like that. And the last resort would be the physical violence. But quite often, especially in the Kali Yuga, because it's full of ignorance and passion, the first resort is the violence. Even at the slightest provocation. You know, you can just walk in the street and you just look at someone. Hey, what are you looking at? Right? What are you doing walking here? Because you're not supposed to be walking here. This is my area. Just like when you walk something in the morning, I go for my japa walk, and you walk past the house, and all of a sudden the dog comes. I always notice they always like to sneak up and do it too, and make you jump out of your skin. Wait till you go past a little bit, and they come up from behind. So people behave like animals. They're barking. You can't walk. Very just like dogs. They're very territorial. This is my area here. How dare you walk in front of my house without my permission. Right? So sometimes like that, people are like that. You're walking up the street, how dare you walk up my street without my permission? What are you doing here? And then they want to fight with you or something like that. So unfortunately, Kali Yuga is like that. Even the slightest provocation, just a look, just a word, just you're walking, you didn't do anything, and people want to take action. And then the first resort of action for them is the physical violence. And we know the story of Bhrigu Muni when he wanted to test who is more powerful, Vishnu or Shiva, and he resorted to greater and greater insults. And the first one was he didn't say anything to Lord. Oh, he wanted to test Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu, wasn't it? The three. And he went to Lord Brahma, and he just ignored him, didn't say anything. Brahma felt very insulted. And then he went to Lord Shiva, and he spoke some harsh words. And Lord Shiva was going to take some action against him. But he went to Lord Vishnu, and he kicked him on the chest, physically. So it's explained, Prabhupada explains there in the Krishna book that this is the most severe, the physical action. The first is, the lesser would be, ignoring. The next would be saying, using speech, harsh words. But the most extreme is physical. So we see that Indra is immediately going to the most extreme reaction, physical. He doesn't come to try to talk over the situation. Well, why didn't you do the puja? Hey, what's going on? For years you've been doing this puja. Right? If you think of it that way.
No mediation.
Right. He didn't do the mediation process. He went straight to action. And the most extreme action. he didn't come and try to talk it over or anything like that. So it's a bit unusual for Indra. I see it as he's being impelled. He had some pride, there's no doubt. And Krishna fanned that, to my mind, he fanned that to an extreme degree to bring it out. To bring it out. And then show that to him and show that to everyone. And then Krishna's going to show how he deals with it. So such is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is so able to deal with every situation. And he expertly not only curbed the pride, but still dealt with Indra in an appropriate way. And Indra was able to continue on his service. That's expert, isn't it? That's very, very expert. That not only you to take care of the problem, but you allow someone to continue on and doing something of value. You can take care of the problem and completely obliterate a person. That's one way. That's one way of dealing with it. Quite often that's the case. And we read about how so many things like that happen. But Krishna is so expert, he deals with each and every one of us in just the right way. So he dealt with Indra like that. And sometimes we have reactions coming on us. And ultimately, we have to understand that Krishna is dealing with us in some way or other. And it is, in the long term, just right. Of course, in the interim, we may have to go through some pain and some suffering, but if one tries to understand it philosophically, at least, then one will, in the end, appreciate that Krishna has dealt with us very nicely. But here, in this particular purport, is mentioned that the goddess Saraswati, Sriraswami comments that although these are heavy insults by Indra, the goddess Saraswati gives another explanation of how we can... The devotee never sees any insult. Balisham means free from pretension. just like a child. So actually, in one sense, if you translate these words and these insults, well, you don't translate them as insults, but you translate them as praise for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So someone can see it that way. Someone who's actually, and generally someone who's in the nature of goodness will always see the good side of things. Whereas someone is in the mode of ignorance will always see the negative and always see the bad side of it. It's like there's that psychological test, you know. You know, is the glass half empty or is it half full? How do you see it? Is it half empty or half full? See it negative or you see it positive? That's the understanding of it. Do you see it half empty or do you see it half full? Right. So we can see things according to our attitude. And it is said that one has to be utsahandasyadharya tattat kamapabhatana, that one has to be positive and confident. One has to have not arrogant, that's another thing, but one has to have a positive attitude. If you have a positive attitude, you work to overcome a problem. If you have a negative attitude, you'll use anything that comes up as an excuse to get out of whatever you have to do, or just to go away. So therefore the Shastras are saying, Rupa Goswami says that the body has to develop the quality of confidence and being positive, not negative. If we're negative, we'll always see the bad in a thing. Of course, that doesn't mean we're naive. We don't see things, but we pay more attention to the positive rather than to the negative. Understand? Devotees aren't naive, but we should be paying more attention to positive. So here, this is the positive here, the translation, actually praise of Krishna, that Krishna is free from pretension, just like a child. Now, as we grow older, generally we get pretentious airs in the material world. Because of we're identifying, we're seeing ourselves in a certain way. This person is very pretentious. He is thinking he is this and that. He's walking. And you can actually tell, isn't it? Someone's walking and they've got an air of, what do they call it? Air of pretension. Pretentious. And they're thinking themselves very so great. I'm better than everybody else. Just by the way you walk, by the way you look, by the way you talk, just by so many ways. And that comes from your consciousness and your thinking. So, but a child doesn't, generally children aren't like that. They're just running around, they are who they are. So Krishna, he is not pretentious. He doesn't have to be. He doesn't have to pretend to be something. He is everything. So there's no question of Krishna being pretentious. And another point is the shtabdam means that he bows down to no one. And why not? Because there is no one that he needs to, there's no one for him to offer homage to. We have to bow down, whether we like it or not. We are bowing down. What was that song by Boy George? Bow down, Mister. I remember years ago that Boy George had that song. It was called Bow Down, Mister. If you don't bow down to Krishna, you're going to bow down to somebody. We like to think we're not curtailing to this one or that. I don't care what he said. I don't care what she said. But sure enough, isn't it? It's like one Brahmachari was telling me before. He was a chef, so he told me that he saw so many things in the kitchen. He said it was so funny. He said the waiters and waitresses would come in and out, and they'd always make a show of being so pleasant and everything like that, and smiling and sweet words to the customers and everything like that. But he said quite often they came in. You remember one time he said, One of the waiters came in and he said, if that man says one more thing to me out there, I'm going to take this bowl of spaghetti and tip it over his head. But he said, but sure enough, when the waiter went back out there, he was like, I'm going to tip it, and he went out through the swinging doors. I bow down to no one, right? But here's your spaghetti. He had the smiling face like that. But in the kitchen, he said, well, I'm going to tip it right over his head. Right? So we're thinking we're not going to bow down. We're not subordinating ourselves. But we're always subordinating ourselves. Right? We're always in a position of subordination. Right? There's no question of it. We're not going to surrender to Krishna. We have to surrender to Maya. There's no two ways about it. There's no, you're not in charge in this universe, that's for sure. You think you're in charge in this universe? You're in so much illusion. You think you are doing so many things. You think you're breathing air. You're not doing any of these things. you are just spirit soul bewildered, but you are thinking, I'm in charge, I'm in control, I'm the boss, I'm the Lord. And Lord, trying to lord it over. I mean, that's our disease. You know, we're trying to lord it over. That's why we're here. We're trying to be Krishna. We're trying to lord it over everybody else. But we ourselves are being lorded over. And then we are forcibly bound down or we are voluntarily bound down. But of course, Krishna doesn't have to bow down. And who was it? Balaram had to set the example with Ramaharshana Sutta because he didn't. He was this at Naimisharanya. Actually, I was just at Naimisharanya when I was in India. Went up to Naimisharanya, and there was that story of Ramaharshana Sutta, who was the speaker of the Vedic Shastras in the assembly of sages. And then when Lord Balaram came there on pilgrimage, of course, all the other sages stood up to receive the Lord. But Ramaharshana Sutta, he was thinking, well, I'm on the Vyasa side, I don't need to stand up. He had a bit of pride, so he didn't stand up to receive the Lord, so Lord Balaram took the kusha grass, right? Mm-hmm. The kusha grass, and he just poked it in the eye, put it in the eye.
Touched him.
Yeah. He touched him, and then that was the end of Ramaharshana Sutta. Just with a bit of grass. So Krishna doesn't have to bow down to anyone. But of course Krishna is very humble. He reciprocates, and we often see, just like with Sudama Brahmana, he came there and Krishna got off his throne and he sat him there and he was worshipping and bathing his feet like that. So Krishna bows down, but he doesn't have to bow down. He doesn't have to offer homage to anyone. Agyam means that there is nothing more for him to know. No. So he's using, of course, Indra is using this word agyam and saying, you're ignorant. He's an ignorant fool. Krishna is just ignorant. He's an ignorant fool. Right? here the word is that actually he has nothing further to be known. He knows everything. Now, why does Krishna know everything? The explanation is given here. Can anyone remember? Why does Krishna know everything? Anyone say? Because he is everywhere. He's omniscient. He's knowing everything. And another place in the Bhagavad Gita, the Prabhupada explained it this way. Krishna knows everywhere because he knows everything because he is everywhere. If you could be everywhere, maybe you would know everything also. So he is omniscient. So he knows everything. He is everywhere. And Pandita Maninam means that he is highly honored by the knowers of the Absolute Truth. Marcha means although he is the Absolute Truth, he nevertheless appears in this world out of affection for his devotees. Indra insults Krishna in many ways. He is an ordinary human being. But Krishna says, Abhadananti mam mudha. People who think in this way, they are like mudhas. They are like the asp, who is very foolish. They do not know my supreme position. So Indra, although the king of heaven, somehow or other, we just observed the Ram Navami, the appearance of Lord Ram. And Ravana was also the same. He couldn't see the position of Ram at all. And he just thought he was just an ordinary human being. He didn't even bother to take benediction from Lord Brahma. About, you know, he asked Lord Brahma for not to be killed. He couldn't be killed by any of the devas or anyone. But he didn't even bother to ask for protection from human beings. Insignificant. So he thought Ram was just an ordinary human being. And here Indra is thinking the same. He is just a child. Over-talkative child. And he is so foolish. Now he is speaking in front of his father, which shows him to be very, very arrogant. He's just a small, especially in Indian culture still, isn't it? You have to be very respectful to your father. You can't be, you know, talking very challenging to your father, isn't it? Still, is it? Still there. Maybe becoming a bit less. Actually, there's one Vedic injunction. The children are supposed to circumambulate their parents three times every day and touch their feet. So Indra is saying that Krishna, he is a child and he's trying to instruct his father. How arrogant is this? Right? That's what he's saying. He's just a small boy. His father was organized a big yagya and do this. And then he says, and the inhabitants of Vrindavan are so foolish that they listen to him. One fool is speaking and the other ones, they're accepting him, so they're even bigger fools. More or less that's what he's saying, isn't it? It's mentioned here like that. They accept what Krishna says. And here is explained that the Kama Mimamsa philosophy, he is talking all this philosophy, Kama Mimamsa, all these different arguments he has given. These are all foolish arguments. He is just a child and he's impudently and arrogantly trying to instruct his father. And his father is so foolish and all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan are so foolish that they actually have accepted what this over-talkative child has said. And now they have given up my puja, and they are arranging for something else. So he has become incensed with anger. And generally it is said by in the Shastra, by the Acharyas, that anger is to be given up. Especially, of course, there is a higher level of anger in the spiritual realm. Sometimes we see that Radharani becomes angry with Krishna. But that is... But she never decreases her affection for Krishna because of that anger. But in the conditioned stage, we saw Prabhupada becoming angry, but that was transcendental anger. Sometimes he became angry at his disciples. You know, I saw a couple of times. Generally, he's lip quivered. You didn't want to go in there then. If somewhere or other you could stay out, you did. But you didn't want to go in like that. When he was angry, there was actually nothing you could say. I saw a few of the disciples try to defend himself, but it was pointless. So we saw Prabhupada, but you know, there's a transcendental anger meant for the benefit of others. When a material anger is meant for the destruction of others, isn't it? There's the difference. Transcendental anger is meant for the benefit, and we see Krishna, we saw Hanuman. I just was reading about Hanuman. He was very angry with Ravana. And Sugriva, you know, we read about Sugriva when Ram came across the bridge, he made the bridge to go into Lanka. And then they camped there, just as on the other side. And then when they camped there, Sugriva just compulsively, he just saw Ravana sitting atop, you know, sitting in his chariot up at the top there, you know, Ram had his army and Ravan had come out and all the Rakshasas were there. This was the description given on top very far away. Sugriva just became incensed with anger. He just jumped up. He jumped up and started to fight with Ravana right before anything happened. The war hadn't started yet. Sugriva just, he got there and he just saw him and he just couldn't help him. He just jumped up there. And then there was he came and he knocked his crown off and he threw him on the ground, and all of a sudden there was a big wrestling match between Ravana and Sugriva. And it was going on, and neither could gain the upper hand. It was only when Ravana started using his mystic powers, Sugriva jumped back. And all the monkeys were, oh, Haribo! But Ravana mildly chastised him. He said, you went there, don't underestimate Ravana. You went there without my permission also. But anyway, he was internally mentioned that Ram was actually very pleased with him, but he mildly rebuked him, you shouldn't have done that. Very dangerous. Anyway, so Sugriva became very angry, and that was definitely for the benefit of everyone, that he became angry with Ram. Actually, there's another story of Sugriva, perhaps another time when Ram came, that in one of the Puranas mentioned that Sugriva jumped over. He became very small and he ran up and down Ravana's arms. and he ran up and down, and Ravana was trying to work out what this thing was running up and down his arms. And he ran up and he ran up and he just, and Ravana turned like this and he was over here and he just spat in his face. He spat in his face and he ran off. We were telling all these stories on Ramanami. So this type of anger. But the material anger means you want to destroy someone, obliterate them, do some harm to them. We were giving a class the other day about Bhishma's instructions to Yudhisthira. Mahabharata, he says that even within your mind, you should not think of... within your mind even, you shouldn't think of harming others. If you want to live your life peacefully in this world, even within your mind, you shouldn't think of harming others. Because if your mind is contemplating that, then it will come to pass that will happen. Either by speech or by physical action. Something will come out. So you should try to control these things as far as possible. So Indra wanted to rebuke Krishna as Vatsalam because the Lord had presented many audacious arguments in the line of Kama Mamsa, Sankhya philosophy also. But although Krishna didn't really accept these arguments, but he was creating a situation. All right, I'll read this again if anyone has any questions. These coward men have acted inimically toward me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, but who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. Any question? Comment? Yes?
And you were speaking earlier on about the importance of being positive or maintaining a positive outlook while we're like going about activities. What if, in the course of our service, we might have to correct someone for some misbehavior or something I've done wrong? How can we do this without developing a sort of unnecessarily fault-finding mentality?
Oh, you have to be very humble. Generally, that type of thing is left to... I've read this, actually. I'm just thinking where I read it, but I read that... maybe in one of those Prabhupada conversation books. I was just reading a while ago that Prabhupada was mentioning like that. Not all the devotees should be taking it upon themselves to correct everybody. That is generally left to those who are designated and assigned to those types of services and duties. So if you have a duty to oversee others and perhaps have a duty to correct them, then you can do it. But to do it, you have to be very, very humble. Otherwise, it will have a very adverse effect. You yourself have to be very humble to be able to do that. increasing your humility, then you'll be able to do it. And you just see it as you have to do your duty as far as this is concerned. That's all. Don't take it as trying to lord it over them or retaliate against them or anything like that, because you're doing your duty as far as this is concerned. And you have to be humble otherwise. Any other question? Yes.
Another example is Lord Hanuman, angry, burned the Sri Lanka.
Mm-hmm. What about that?
Yeah, he burned the.
With his tail, because it was set on fire. You know, we were just reading that pastime actually. And Hanuman jumped over there, and then of course he made himself big, and he wanted to test, wasn't it? He wanted to test the strength of the Rakshasa army, and he wanted to see Ravana for himself. When he was searching the whole of Lanka for Sita, he went everywhere, and he saw Ravana actually, and but he wanted to test him a little bit more also. So after he spoke with Sita, he made himself big and he started to challenge all the Rakshasis and the Rakshasas. And he actually slayed many of the generals that Ravana sent. Only when Indrajit came, wasn't it? Then he tied him up with the noose of the snake, the ropes of Brahma, that he was able to. And then only then, because Hanuman agreed to be bound by them, and then they took him there. And many were saying to kill him. It was only Vibhishana who said that no, emissary is not to be killed. No, he's a spy. Kill him. And then Ravana finally decided, set fire to his tail. But Hanuman jumped up and he just set fire to the whole of Lanka. And the description actually is amazing. He almost destroyed the whole of Lanka. Not only set fire, but he was just smashing down. There's a whole description of them. There was all these walls and gates, and he practically smashed them all. And he jumped back and he said, I better not do anything like this. It is for Ram to come here and kill. He wanted to actually kill Ravana himself.
The pregnant ladies were aborting.
What's that?
Aborting. The pregnant ladies.
Yeah,
Carrying
babies. Yeah. That was it. They were afraid. Any other question? I went to a very nice Lord Hanuman temple in Ayodhya. We were just in Ayodhya. Before you go to the Ram temple, well, there's no temple really. There's still the ruins of the other place. they went there and smashed the mosque that was there, and the Indian government has not allowed them to actually build the temple, so they have a little thing there, little Ram deity. But before there's a Hanuman temple, very nice Hanuman temple, and packed, totally packed, all the time packed. And actually, when I was going in, it was the first time I've been there, and it was all these sweets. There was nothing but sweet stuff. Why have they got so many just sweet? And I realised, they're all buying sweets to offer Hanuman. They buy big boxes of sweets. And I just saw people walking up and going, what are they doing with these sweets? Then I realised. And then I saw the boxes, all the pujaris are standing there. And they're getting so many boxes, they're just putting them in before Hanuman. And then coming back out. Non-stop. Sweets and big balls and laglu and all these things. But very nice temple of Hanuman there. Very, very beautiful Hanuman deity, actually. Hard to get close to such a big crowd. But Lord Hanuman. He's not ordinary. Dai Oglis Silfropa Dakini.